Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
At the Savage Nation home front here on the Savage Nation, watching America go down the Gulf. And we have a president who has no idea what is going on around him. He is being called party boy by some in the media. President party boy, the wrong kind of leadership. Did you know that yesterday Obama held another White House event? He held a picnic for Congress members with hot dogs, a fire pit, and cold beverages. Did you know that during the last 7 weeks, while oil was decimating the Gulf, while unemployment was decimating the workers, old Obama has frolicked and rock and rolled through three major White House music parties? Did you know that he had a black-tied tent bash on the White House South Lawn for the America-bashing Mexican President Felipe Calderon? You, of course, remember the disgrace with Paul McCartney, a night of tributes to the old lady look-alike Beatle, which featured the President Obama, onto the dance floor joining the children's favorite, the Jonas Brothers, in a dance fest, while McCartney, the old woman look-alike, the old Beatle who said, "Hey, you want a revolution," sang his song Michelle to the First Lady. Did you know party boy Obama had an event at the Ford Theater during which he took a break from kicking ass on the oil spill? And he relaxed to certain songs from American Idol winner Kelly Clarkson, among other unknowns. Did you know about the fact that the president launched his White House days with a round of Martini Wednesdays, with conga line dancing and Super Bowl parties and Stevie Wonder concerts? Did you know that the president loves fun and parties? Did you know last weekend Vice President frat boy Joe Biden and White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, fresh back from hiding in Israel, had a squirt gun party at the vice president's residence in Bethesda, where the leaders of the free world ran around giggling and shooting squirt guns at each other? Members of the press, who were supposed to be the watchdogs for America, joined in the fun, grabbing squirt guns and going tee-hee with the boys. Did you know last Sunday, presidential spokesmouth Tommy Vietor and Obama speechwriter Jon Favreau, 29-year-olds acting like 5-year-olds, were at a Georgetown bar stripped to the waist playing a game of beer pong with a gang of bare-chested buddies. Did you know any of this? The oil spill gets worse. People in the Gulf are not believing they have such an idiot for a president, an incompetent, out-of-touch, unreal moron in plain English. How can you not see what's going on? Comrade Mugabe said, increased racial strife, reduced transparency, and lowered ethics. That's Comrade Mugabe in Zimbabwe, you see. And so all of you out there who voted for Obama thinking of the change and hope he would bring must be asking yourself, I guess change means he and Michelle changing into their party clothes. The only thing that Obama's competent at is putting down America and throwing more and more parties. Although he doesn't even plan them or throw them, he just goes to them every night. Huh? Did you read Dorothy Rabinowitz's column on the from the Wall Street Journal, An Alien in the White House? Grand apologies to the Muslim world, and how he is so wanting in certain qualities that we have all taken for granted in our presidents. How about his returning the bust of Winston Churchill to Great Britain? as one of his first reforms. Shall we wake up one morning and see that he put up a bust of Lenin or Marx, and you'll say, so what? You might just say, so what? You just might say, so what, but you've missed some of Obama's greatest achievements. Near 10% unemployment, multi-trillion dollar deficits, wasted trillions on society's bloodsuckers, historical increase in national debt, stagnant economy, zero job growth, fascist takeover of private industries, increased racial strife, reduced transparency, lowered ethics. Did Michael Savage miss anything about Barack Hussein Obama? Yes, I guess I missed something. He's not yet been given a Nobel Prize for racial harmony. 16 months into his reign of terror, he has implemented three-quarters of his four-part platform. He's not done yet. He is not yet done yet. He has not yet stocked the Supreme Court with total incompetent lackeys. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. michaelsavage.com. Come on, guys. This is a caller-based show, and today you're going to do the show. I've done what I'm going to do. I'm taking a caller right now. Just to show you, I'm taking a call right now. Did you hear yesterday's show with the guy Michael from San Diego who claimed he was a real gangster? Well, he is a real gangster. We looked him up. Even he had bad things to say about this regime, saying they're below gangsters. They have no honor whatsoever. Tom in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
God bless you, Michael, as ever. Michael, we're living in Caligula. Rome is burning. November is our last shot to get it right. If we do not get it right, we deserve to burn with Rome.
All right, we'll let that cheery thought just hang in the air. That's very cheerful for the day on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, a racket. Financial Regulation Bill, a racket. Energy Bill, just as soon as Lindsey Graham gets his new panties in the mail. The Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, Children's Health Insurance Bill, American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Did I miss something? Anything else that I miss about Barack Hussein Obama's reign so far? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We have a lot of interesting sound, a lot of big stories out there. Protest Arizona, anyone? It's backfiring. That's right, it's backfiring. Many groups are now planning to hold their events and conventions in Arizona. They're pulling them out of Los Angeles. They're pulling them out of states that have boycotted Arizona, and they're going to be holding them in Arizona. Many people are saying, you know what, I think I will support Arizona. I think I will show Arizonans that they did the right thing. And yet Obama had the nerve to bring the president of the nation that is flooding us with illegal aliens and tell us we are wrong. Did I miss something? Yes, Alan in New York, WR, you're reminding us. What did I miss that Obama did?
The $400 million pledge to the Palestinians after they tried to come in with illegal contraband.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right. Yesterday, he wrote a check for $400 million in between planning a new party. I thought we were living in a democracy where there's a Congress with checks and balances.
They come in illegally, the blockade, they try to bust through the blockade, they come and they beat up on the Israelis, and they don't even want to bring, Hamas doesn't even let in all the stuff,
Well, the issue was the president writing a check for $400 million to Palestinians without any congressional discussion. I think that's rather strange. What if he had sent $40 to... $400 to each of a million Americans who are in the poverty level. You think that they could have used the $400?
I think they would use it a lot better.
He had sent $400 check to each of 1 million of the poorest Americans? Would you have objected to that? I wouldn't have. But why would he send it to a foreign government that's not even a government, not even foreign? It's an alien government. President party boy. Oh, by the way, there's good news. Geert Wilders in Holland, the Dutch lawmaker whose warnings about radical Islam have stoked controversy worldwide, has become a kingmaker in Holland. The elites hate his guts, but the Dutch people know that he's right and they voted him in. Soares in Dutch election, where he's going to be the kingmaker in Holland, where they might eventually stop the building of mosques and stop the flood of Islamist immigrants who are having 6 to 10 children and living on welfare and disrespecting not only the language but the nation itself. The elitists don't like this. The elitists in Holland don't like this, but he likes it very much, and the people like it very much. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Here's another story I found. Blair's ties to Libya drawing scrutiny. Remember Tony Blair, the nicely smiling British prime minister, good friend of Bill Clinton? British and European so-called leaders are questioning Tony Blair's role as Middle East peace envoy following the reports that just came out about his deep business links to Libyan leader Muhammad Gaddafi. You didn't know about that, the fact that the Brits are not only the biggest anti-Semites on the planet, but the Brits under Tony Blair were also the biggest devious players on the planet. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Come along and be my party doll. Come along and be my party doll. Come along and be my party doll.
As you well know, I'm not a fan of the England of Tony Blair or the England of the last character. We're praying that the new administration in England is a little more British. A little more British would be good. And Prince Charles, frankly, is the most shocking figure in the entire Western Hemisphere. He gave a speech yesterday, an hour-long speech. This is the heir to the British throne, who argued that we must follow the Islamic way to save the world. This is the Prince of England, Prince Charles. Follow the Islamic way to save the world. Prince Charles yesterday urged the world to follow Islamic spiritual principles in order to protect the environment. In an hour-long speech, the lunatic with big ears, who has never worked a day in his life, has lived off the pillage and robbery of his ancestors, who at least had balls, argued that man's destruction of the world was contrary to the scriptures of all religions, but particularly those of Islam. This is the Prince of England now, Prince Charles. He said the current division between man and nature had been caused not just by industrialization, but by our attitude to the environment, which goes against the grain of sacred traditions, especially those of Islam. He spoke about his study of the Quran, which he told his followers that there is no separation between man and nature. And he says we must always live within our environment's limits. The prince was speaking to an audience of scholars at the Oxford Center for Islamic Studies, which attempts to brainwash British citizens as to the benefit of converting to Islam. In his speech, the lunatic king merged religion with the environment. He added, quote, "The inconvenient truth," stealing that from Al Gore, "the inconvenient truth," said the dummy, "is that we share this planet with the rest of creation for a very good reason. And that is, we cannot exist on our own without the intricately balanced web of life around us." Nothing wrong with that. But now he jumps and says, "Islam has always taught this. And to ignore that lesson is to default on our contract with creation." Charles spoke at Oxford University's Sheldonian Theater. "I expect to wake up any day and find out that the idiot with big ears who never worked a day in his life has converted to Islam in order to follow the Islamic way." 1-800-449-8255. It reminds me of something Jonathan Swift, the Anglo-Irish satirist who wrote Gulliver's Travels, wrote. He feared from an early age that he would go insane. And so strong was Swift's fear that he once remarked to a friend when they were gazing at the withered crown of a tree, "I shall be like that tree, I shall die from the top." In 1738, Swift began to show signs of illness. In 1742, he declined dramatically. To protect him from unscrupulous hangers-on who had started to prey on him, his close friends had him declared of unsound mind and memory. He was dead within 3 years, dying from the top down. The Western world seems to be dying the same way from the top down. Most of the people at the top, most of our so-called leaders, are of unsound mind and memory. Obama, for example, will pose for pictures with Palestinian terrorists. Obama will pose for pictures with the irrelevant Beatle, Paul McCartney. But Obama won't pose for a picture with the leader of Israel, our only ally in the Middle East. The former Prime Minister of England, Tony Blair, has been exposed as having ties with the madman Gaddafi in Libya. Prince Charles has said that we should use Islamic principles to protect the environment. Western leaders are insane and the world is dying from the top down. Agree or disagree? Follow the Islamic way to save the world, Prince Charles urges environmentalists? Have you ever seen anything like this in your life? I wonder if Prince Charles has removed the bust of Winston Churchill from his office. And if he has done so, I wonder whose bust he has in his office. No double entendre implied. San Diego, Barry, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Michael, great show. Listen, I think we are witnessing an orgy of political and corporate corruption, the likes of which the world has never seen. This is the single biggest financial con job that the world has ever seen, a level of debauchery, and you're a historian, that exceeds that of Caligula's Rome, Michael.
Barry, let me ask you, did you write my newest book? Because I not only say what you just said in 110,000 words, but I spell out who did it, how they did it, and what they intend to do if they're not stopped.
No, sir, but I have read all your other books, and I've been using this term. I've never heard anybody else on the radio, like you invent a lot of original terms and are a wordsmith, so am I, but I've been using this term, orgy of corruption, the likes of which the world has never seen, and using the metaphor of Caligula's Rome, which the stuff that's going on today literally pales
right.
by comparison.
Well, you got to understand, Obama didn't invent this. Remember who was behind the throne. Nancy Pelosi is the most corrupt speaker of the House in history, in my opinion. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And you know, under Caligula's reign, it was...
Rahm Emanuel is the most corrupt, let us say, chief of staff ever seen in the White House. Would you agree with that?
Roger that.
All right. So what would you expect when you have a party boy in the White House? What do you think? He doesn't care about the money. One thing about Obama is he's not in it for the money. He's not improving himself financially, so far as we know. But those around him are rolling in it like pigs in you-know-what.
Absolutely right.
All right. Well, you see, at least we agree on something. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. When I come back, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255 to join the conversation with the smartest people in America.
Savage.
It's my party and I'll cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. You would cry too if it happened to you.
Now, as you know, Obama took over the automobile company, the automobile giant called General Motors. And Obama, when he took over GM, said it would be good for America. But we just learned this. I don't know if it'll make it tomorrow's newspaper, but General Motors, which Obama took over, has shifted manufacturing to Mexico, where the auto workers are paid $26 a day as opposed to $50 an hour here in the United States of America. General Motors workers in Mexico earn wages and benefits of 340 pesos a day. That's about 26 bucks a day, or less than $4 an hour. And thus far, so far as I can tell from this article from Bloomberg, about $80 billion worth of business has been sent by General Motors. The U.S. government has distributed about $80 billion in the auto industry financing program to support the industry. Mexico's share of North American auto production will rise to 19% over the next decade from an average of 12% in 2000 to 2009. Over the same period, the U.S. will lose 7 percentage points to 65% of the market, and Canada's share will hold at 16%. Mexico's share of North American auto production will rise at a quicker pace as GM, Ford Motor Corp, and Chrysler seek out workers making less than 10% of what their U.S. counterparts earn. And you thought that Obama, did it for you. You actually believed that Obama did it for you. You actually took the bait, hook, line, and sinker, while he partied on. New York City, W.R. Jack, welcome to the Savage Nation.
It's like I woke up one day and I'm in great... con man, the thing you left out, he promised to end the war in Afghanistan. So he promptly puts in 30,000 extra troops. The opium crop is doing beautifully, thank you very much.
Don't you understand it's not really a war because the New York Times doesn't report on it? It's not Bush's war, so it's not a real war. And the men, and although the soldiers are dying, they don't really count because they're not from the Upper East Side. Their mothers don't shop at Macy's or any of the stores wherever they shop. They don't wear Manolos. Since their mothers don't wear Manolos, the boys who die don't matter. They're cannon fodder.
Not only are the boys dying, but he has demoralized all of the troops. I mean, I know a lot of guys that are in, and, you know, nobody...
Why would they be demoralized by a commander-in-chief who hates the military, who won't even go to Arlington on Memorial Day? Why would they hate him?
Yeah, don't ask, don't tell. That's out. Everything he's promised has been a lie. Everything.
Well, but it plays well. It plays well in Washington and in New York City and at Harvard.
Even the
plays well at Harvard, where the boys wear panties, not underwear. Okay, you want me to get crude? I'll get crude. Since crude is all over the Gulf of Mexico, maybe it's time for us to get crude on the radio. Maybe then you'll get the message. Maybe then you'll get the message. Okay? Las Vegas. Ralph, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hard on Obama, don't you think? I mean,
who?
The guy hasn't gotten caught with an intern yet or nothing, has he?
Well, you know, that might be a plus. It might show that he's more human than I think.
I mean, you know, he sits here and back.
I mean, at least if he had some of the proclivities that Bill Clinton had, we might have hope for him. See, I fear ideologues who don't really go in any direction of pure pleasure. They worry me. Their only pleasure is ideology. They're more dangerous than the party animals, actually. Thanks for the call. Mississippi, Carol, welcome to the program.
I'd like to make a comment on Prince Charles. When he's monarch, he will be head of the Church of England figurehead.
Yes, he'll be the King of England when his mom goes to heaven.
The Church of England.
Maybe it'll become the Mosque of England.
It might be.
He might decide that England is a Muslim country. In order to be accommodating, in order to be tolerant, in order to avoid any strife, any further strife, he could wake up one day and decide that it's best to become a Muslim, right?
Very close to it. Is that the path he would like to take?
He might just take it. After all, he's the prince. He knows everything, even though he's never worked a day in his life.
No, we lived there for 4 years. They are great people, and I just hate to see this.
Well, we all hate to think it. We all pray for England, but do you think it has much hope with a prince like that? I don't know. I won't be as pessimistic as I sound. New York City, WOR, Bill, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, how are you? My topic is the illegal invasion that we're suffering right now. I'm married to an immigrant, a proud American right now. I was fought in the war. I was in the Marine Corps of my country. But from what I'm seeing inside the Latin community is people that left oppression for a better life, they can't believe what they're witnessing. I've never been that involved in politics, but my God, I can't believe what I'm witnessing.
What, you mean the meltdown of our freedoms under Mugabe Obama?
Yeah. I mean, these are people... You know, I can't blame them for crossing the border. We have discussions all the time at my house, and, you know, my family, her family, we're all Christians. You know, we love God. We love our country. But I can understand why they came here, you know, to leave oppressive nations and hard conditions. So I can't condemn them. I say I probably would.
Yeah, I understand that. But that doesn't mean that we can take in all of the world's... needy people. That's the whole point. Of course we understand their motivation.
Yes.
If you have a nation that bends over backwards to cater to the illegal alien and arrests Border Patrol agents who do their job the way they try Marines who do their job over in Iraq or Afghanistan, what would you do if you were the enemy or you were an illegal alien? You take advantage of such a nation that is upside down, I would think.
As long as I could take advantage of them, I'd be taking advantage of them.
That's correct. And if the people don't want you, let the people be damned, because the government wants you, and the government takes your side. The government calls the people of Arizona the racists, not the people who are trampling on a country that isn't even theirs.
Well,
what would you call people? Let's be clear about it. Let's be calm about it. What would you call an immigrant horde that refuses to learn English, that goes to sporting events and waves a country of origin flag, a country they fled from because it was a hellhole, and refuses to assimilate. Would you call that a racist people? Would you call that a racist motivation? Why will they not learn English? Why will they wave the Mexican flag at sporting events? And why in the world do we tolerate this?
I would call them, I hate to say this, but when you put it like that, the enemy almost. But I don't necessarily, you know, that would be branding a little bit.
So you don't want to brand an entire people the enemy the way they branded us the enemy. No, you don't want to do that.
No. Dr. Savage,
Obama's branded everyone who stands up for America as the enemy, hasn't he? Obama's branded anyone who stands up for borders, language, and culture the enemy, hasn't he? Yep. Obama and his nuts from Harvard, who squirt each other with water guns on the weekend, think they know how to run the world when they can't even maintain the worst environmental disaster in the world. They have still not figured out the first step. They've turned down offers from day one from foreign governments. He wouldn't let the foreign governments to bring in rigs to stop this. Do you know that several nations had underwater devices that could have gone down and plugged this hole, and he wouldn't let them help? Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not.
Of course not, because the old York Times, run by the same type of people who squirt each other with water guns and panties on the weekend, they're the same people who hide this from you in the news. So your only outlet is the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling. Pinchy Sulzberger, that's the publisher of the New York Times. His grandfather created a great American institution, the New York Times. His father did a fairly fine job of ushering it across the decades. And then all hell broke loose. He gave it to a lunatic son. The prince of the New York Times, Pinchy Sulzberger, equivalent to Prince Charles, wrecked the New York Times and doesn't care. He has no desire to save the paper. It doesn't matter to him. He'd rather continue to get the accolades at the events he goes to, the rewards from those who don't matter, than from the stockholders of the New York Times. Now, we've said all of this. You've heard it all, right? So we can go on to other topics. Naomi Emery wrote a fabulous editorial entitled "Democrats Are Suffering from Messiah Fatigue." It is on michaelsavage.com next to President Party Boy. And she said that the Messiah fatigue is what happens when your Messiah turns into a millstone, pardon me, and the force that was supposed to boost you into divine and deep power seems more of an anchor instead. That's Obama, according to her. Pardon me for coughing. I had a bit of an incident last night, 3 a.m. My allergies have gotten so bad, you'll have to forgive me. They have almost morphed into something I've never had in my life, which is mild asthma, so pardon me. I never thought that this would enter my life, but it has, and I'm doing the best I can. I will not leave the radio unless I absolutely have to, I mean, even for a minute. So if I cough once in a while, it's because I'm coughing once in a while. Abby Sutherland feared lost at sea. This is an interesting story. There's a 16-year-old young lady trying to circumnavigate the globe in her own sailboat. She's an incredibly heroic young lady. And a support crew received repeated distress signals and then has lost contact with the 16-year-old girl attempting to circumnavigate the globe. It's a very fascinating story that we linked up, pardon me, from ABC News. You should watch the video, because in it, you will see psychologists saying to the parents, how dare you let your 16-year-old go to sea alone? You should have protected her. And the father and the mother, beautiful people, said, when any of my children have a goal or a goal of any kind, we try to encourage them. But the nanny state said, oh no, this is child abuse to let the child take a sailboat around the world. Now remember, this child is not an ordinary child. She's been training and practicing sailing ever since she's young. But the old nanny man, psychologist, said, oh no, you should have prohibited her from doing that. Now these are the same nanny men who bring perverts into the schools to teach girls to sleep with girls, boys to sleep with girls, to teach them to not respect God or the state, God or religion, who teach them to put a condom on a cucumber, to make them watch pornographic imagery in their classrooms, who tell them that there's all sorts of moral relativism. They wreck children's minds, so when a child appears whose parents say, go for it, girl, go around the globe on your sailboat, the same nanny man says, oh, you were committing child abuse. I'll be right back.
Savage. Come along and be my party doll. Come along and be my party doll. Come along and be my party doll. I'll make love to you, to you. I'll make love to you.
We're talking about the party animal, Obama, and his 29-year-old lunatics shooting squirt guns at each other while the world goes up in flames. Or shall I say, while the environment is awash and crude. Their crude behavior is symbolic of the crude washing along the coast of Louisiana, now Florida, hitting the areas of northern Florida and the panhandle. It's unbelievable to me. Yeah, it's true his ratings are low, very low. Slips to 44% according to Gallup. I guess Gallup will now be considered a right-winger. I guess now the Gallup poll becomes a right-wing poll, a Ku Klux Klan poll. To the White House, it will no longer be the Gallup poll, but the Ku Klux Klan poll. They will see racism in the Gallup poll. New low for O slips to 44%. Yeah, unbelievable. But where's Bush now that we need him? Chicago, Chris, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Thank you for taking my call. The reason I called is I'd like to disagree with you on that young woman who took the trip on the ocean. I feel that she's recklessly endangering herself by doing such a thing.
Do you? And okay, let's have a discussion about this. Do you know anything about sailing?
I don't know anything about sailing. I've never sailed myself.
All right, that's fair enough. Why would you assume that a 16-year-old is incapable of sailing a yacht around the world?
It's not that I assume that she's incapable. I'm sure she's a competent sailor. But the thing is, there's so many dangers out there on the ocean. So many, many dangers. You've got all, you know, there's so much to...
You know that her parents would not even let her walk home from school alone at night because they felt the streets were more dangerous than the ocean?
Well, that's true, too. I agree with them.
See?
But I still think out there on the ocean, the storms can come up. Anything can happen. The boat could be capsized.
Well, she is. She writes, actually, she sent a report from her boat, Wild Eyes, saying, the wind is beginning to pick up. It's back up to 20 knots. I'm expecting that by midnight tonight, it would have 35 to 50 knot winds with gusts to 60. So I'm off to sleep before it really picks up. Abby's goal is to become the youngest sailor to pull off a solo nonstop circumnavigation. But the fact is, another youngster did so. You should see that one. An Australian girl, 17 years old, did this and came home as a hero. I think it's the most beautiful thing on earth to see young women doing this.
Well, it's wonderful, and I have nothing bad to say about that, but it's just, to me, it's in danger. Just like when you have people who climb mountains. They want to climb the highest peak, and then an avalanche or something occurs.
Yes, but they know the risk going in. I'm saying that's all true. It's inherent in challenging nature. Nature is not... People don't understand that nature is not benevolent. Nature is not benevolent. Nature is unpredictable. Nature is indifferent to humankind, incidentally. And if people don't know that by now, then they're living in Disneyland. So we agree on that, but she knows all of that. She goes around the world on a boat. You know what I'm going to ask you to do? Could you go to my website sometime tonight, look at the story, and click on the child herself, the young lady herself. She's actually reporting from her boat through a laptop along the way. And judge for yourself if you think she was too young to even try this.
Well, I agree with you. Some young people have more intelligence and more
intelligence, more guts. What a role model she is instead of one of these single moms that are brought into the White House and held up as a role model. Well, what a role model this young lady is. I mean, okay, so what age would you say is the correct age to let a young lady sail around the world, assuming she's competent to do so and wants to do it? What age?
You know, I couldn't say what age. I really couldn't say.
Well, all right, you're a gentleman and you're a reasonable man, but I think that if you go to the story and you take a look at the 16-year-old sailor before she went missing, you might have a different opinion about Abby. And let's pray to God she's not lost. Thank you for the call. Let me tell you something. Even boating on a bay can be rough. Never mind an ocean. I don't know where she gets the guts for this. I know what it's like to be out at sea and getting lost at sea. I write about that story once in my new book about going out to sea with hubris. and I compare it to Obama becoming president. The difference is I was out to sea without a motor and I was able to get back. He's out to sea as president. I don't know if he can ever bring us back. Abby Sunderland, 16, is feared lost at sea today in her attempt to become the youngest sailor ever to circumnavigate the globe. A support crew lost contact with Abby, who was in heavy seas in the southern Indian Ocean early this morning. The boat is most likely not completely submerged because there's another alarm that sends off a signal if it goes 15 feet underwater, said her brother in an interview in Los Angeles. Yes, she's pretty banged up out right now, but and we're just trying to get the rescue teams out. Abby's mother, Marianne Sunderland, told ABC News that Abby manually activated two emergency beacons sometime before 6 a.m. Pacific time today. A plane from Qantas Air, based in Australia, planned to fly over Sunderland's location at first light Friday or late Thursday evening Eastern time. It's very big seas. I mean, if you're not a boater, you know what a 25-foot sea is? It's frightening. And the last time in contact, she was in 25-foot seas with 35-knot winds. The closest land to Abby's boat was Reunion Island, which is east of Madagascar. The nearest ship, 400 miles away. Two boats headed out to find the young lady. One of them 40 hours away. The other's 48 hours away. She's in the middle of nowhere in the southern Indian Ocean. Go see her. Go and take a look at her. 16-year-old lost at sea, trying to be the first to circumnavigate the globe in a sailboat. But she isn't the first young lady who did this, nor the first young man. Go look at these youngsters who do this. You'll see the youth of America and the youth of the world, the youth that's never seen in the White House. You see, these are not the single moms that the White House would bring in and hold up as a hero. Not a single mom brought into the White House and held up as a hero for you to look up to. No, not a single mom in sight.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
About the party animal in the White House, who is, you could say, fiddling while Rome burns, you know. Party after party. Vice President Biden, Rahm Emanuel having a squirt gun party over the weekend. It's behavior becoming the leaders of the free world. It really is. Because there are no crises. Things are just doing fine. And there's no point in showing people that you really mean what you're saying. The important thing is to have a good time now that you've taken over the country. And since the people have no power whatsoever to fight back in any way, and you can basically manipulate them in any way that you wish, you can force an illegal health care bill down their throats, you can bankrupt the country, you can reward the boys on Wall Street who put you in power, you may as well have a squirt gun parties. We're talking about that. And we're talking about the youngest sailor who is now lost at sea, a 16-year-old young lady who has not been heard from. There was a blog tracking Abby's progress by her support team, and she's gone missing. Her EPIRB is not beeping, if you know anything about sailing, but to me, she's a hero. Even if she's lost at sea, this child is a role model. I mean, yeah, she got into heavy seas, and all of the nanny state people say, oh, she's too young to have done this. These are the same people who come into the schools with all sorts of perverse lessons for the children, teach them to have sex at age 5, or if it feels good, do it. So here's a clean-cut young lady who's sailing around the world and gets into trouble. And she has sparked a debate over how young is too young for a youngster to take on an epic journey of this nature. There's a 13-year-old who's tackled Everest, by the way. He is the youngest sailor. Maybe she's lost, maybe she isn't. Was she too young to face the perils of the seas? Was the teen climber at 13, Jordan Romero, too young to face the perils of the world's highest peak? I don't think so. She's attempted solo circumnavigation. This child's unbelievable. I really wish you'd go on to the story, which we linked up from ABC News, and look at the video link, which is 7 minutes long when you get a minute, of the child herself. Actually, it's amazing the world we live in. She was transmitting from her boat, you know, pictures of herself. I don't even know how this technology works. I swear to God, it's astounding to me. But her mother, Mary Ann Sunderland, said that Abby manually activated two emergency beacons sometime 6 a.m. this morning, about 6 a.m. this morning Pacific time. So something happened. The ship must have gotten hit by a 2 weeks ago, an experienced sailor and his wife in their 60s. Their sailboat was found washed up on shore. A rogue wave hit them. There are rogue waves, by the way. They do exist. But that's the nature of boating. Everyone who goes boating knows that that could happen. We have a clip of the young lady ready now. Let's hear it.
I'm definitely nervous, but I understand the ocean, and I understand how dangerous what I'm doing actually is, and I understand how careful I need to be out there.
Down below is here where I'll spend most of my time. I can control pretty much the whole boat from right here. I've got my chart plotter, my autopilot.
She's 16 years old. She's as experienced as people 50, 60 years old, by the way, who've been sailing for 5 years, if not more. I don't see that age should be a limit here in terms of, she's not 8 years old, for example. 16 is an adult as far as I'm concerned with regard to this kind of event. Well, what kind of nanny state are we living in? You telling me it's okay for children to have sex at 14? Yeah, that's Ruth Bader Ginsburg's platform. Go ask her. The ACLU has an official platform that it's okay to have sex at 14 years of age. And it's okay for an adult to have sex with a 14-year-old, but not for a 16-year-old to have a clean shot at taking a circumnavigation around the globe. That's not allowed by the nanny state, by the pervs. We could talk about that if you want. Or Prince Charles says that Islam is the way to go in order to save the environment. I mean, it leaves you scratching your head. I don't understand it. I have nothing, there's nothing particularly exceptional about Islam when it comes to the environment that I know of. Where does it say that where in the Islamic world are they more sensitive to the environment? Am I missing something? Which Islamic nation has an environmentally friendly policy towards nature? I don't know. Did I miss something in my studies, perhaps? Perhaps I'm being a little too culturally insensitive here. You mean we're the only beasts on the planet? Only America's evil. China's excellent with the environment. Even though they have no religion other than communism mixed with capitalism, China's now more sensitive to the environment than we are? Or which nation is more sensitive than we are to the environment in terms of the majors? China? Are you crazy? Norfolk, Virginia. Noor, welcome to the Savage Nation.
So much. God bless you for taking my call. I just wanted to talk about this precious young lady that's out at sea. Number one, God bless her. I'm praying for her. I'm going to believe the Lord is going to save her. Just a miracle to show these people that when a young lady who is clean cut, who's taking a challenge, can do this, she can succeed with our prayers in America, even if they don't believe in God, and even if they're training our young people into perversion at schools. Number one. Number two, it's her business between her and her parents. If her parents said okay, then she has a right to do it. I'm sick and tired of social services determining how our children.
That's exactly right. You have to watch the videotape to see her parents, who are very clear-eyed, who say we would never have let her go if we weren't sure she was experienced. They let her do solos off the California coast. She's done, I think, 30-day solos before off the coast of California, which can be extremely rough, and they felt she was ready for it. Of course they know there's inherent risk.
God bless them for it. I think these are people, individualists, who love their nation, who love their children, and want to raise them to be able to know how to take a challenge on.
Well, remember, she didn't make this decision on her own. The parents said it was okay. That's the important thing to remember. They bought her the 40-foot sailboat. They made certain it had all of the survival gear on it. So let's pray for the child, and let's hope she comes back. But it's a very interesting debate, by the way. How young is too young for climbing Mount Everest? How young is it to let a child circumnavigate the globe in a sailboat? I mean, it's a very interesting set of questions here. You know, I have some rather unusual feelings about the hikers, for example, who try to climb even Mount Hood in Oregon. Every summer, the same thing. The yuppies like to go up by foot and come down by helicopter at your expense. The yuppies are used to screaming mommy when they don't want to come down, and they have, you know, the helicopter boys come and save them at great risk to the helicopter pilots. I believe that they should be forced to pay for the rescue. My personal opinion is that anyone who climbs a great mountain should sign a paper in advance that says, I recognize the risks I am undertaking, and should I get in trouble, rescue efforts may be expended upon me, but I will cover all of the costs of that. That may cut out the one-way yuppie climbs. I mean, there's an awful lot of them. These are guys in their 30s, 40s. They love to climb one way, and then they get tired. And then they just say, let's press the beacon. And out come the guys in the helicopters, because they know it doesn't cost them anything. So it's an interesting discussion unto itself. Kevin in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I have to disagree with her being able to circumnavigate the oceans. Would we want her driving in the Indianapolis 500 or voting for president?
Let's back up for a minute. You're raising interesting questions, but I don't think you're actually a sailor. Is that correct?
I'm not.
See, I'm not trying to embarrass you,
no,
but
I understand.
I'm not trying to be a wise guy here and say I know it all. This is someone's life at stake. But, you know, driving in the Indianapolis 500 is a lot different than sailing around the world alone. There are risks in both endeavors. That is true. But the skill sets are quite different. And in fact, in most cases, it's much safer to sail around the world than it would be to race at Indianapolis.
I would think it's probably safer to go around Indianapolis with the car.
Well, you see, in Indianapolis, you are also relying upon the skill of the other drivers. I'll never forget when I was at the Indy 500 about 5 years ago, there was a girl driver, Patrick, and they were making a big deal out of her. But you know what she did? She made a wrong maneuver, and she cost another guy his entire car. She did not lose her car. She moved in the wrong way, and she destroyed this other man's race car. It just happened. What I'm saying is, when you're on a racetrack, the other driver is as big a risk to you as your own potential for a mistake. While on a sailboat, there's no chance of another boat coming and hitting you, or let us say the chance is 1 in a billion or whatever the number may be.
I'm not arguing that she's capable of doing it. But if she does it, then next year we'll have a 15-year-old doing it. And then
if the 15-year-old has 5 years of sailing experience, and the 15-year-old has done a 30-day stint at sea in his or her sailboat, and has shown she knows all about navigation and survival and chart plotting and all of this and all of that, and they have the guts to challenge it, why not let these young people take that challenge? Why must we turn into such wimps when we don't let our children off the leash enough, as far as I'm concerned?
This is
why it's a debate, because reasonable people can disagree. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Somewhere off the coast of Africa, a speck of a sailboat is on a course around the world. At the helm, a 16-year-old girl traveling alone, risking her life with her parents' permission.
Well, of course, with the parents' permission. They're real parents, as opposed to the role model parents that we have with the government saying, you know, have sex with a stranger at 14. Now, we've got to hope that the 16-year-old is not lost at sea, but she's in trouble. There's no question about it. And it's causing a national debate that's going to be a big thing on ABC News tonight on 2020. And, of course, the nanny state is already in an uproar. Oh, how dare you shockingly let a child go to sea? And that's coming, of course, from the same people who tell you to have your child, don't do anything I wouldn't do. Have sex at 14. If it feels good, do it. That kind of thing. Yes, she's one of the youngest sailors to ever tried this. She was prepared for it, but she got into trouble. Anyway, I think we've covered this, but I want to read something to you from Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. If you want to know, from Typhoon. If you want to read the best sea writing ever written, I would say this ranks in the top three. I don't know anyone better. I'm going to read you a paragraph. It's about a ship caught in a typhoon. Let's see what you think about it. The motion of the ship was extravagant. Her lurches had an appalling helplessness. She pitched as if taking a header into a void and seemed to find a wall to hit every time. When she rolled, she fell on her side headlong, and she would be righted back by such a demolishing blow that Jukes felt her reeling as a club man reels before he collapses. The gale howled and scuffled about gigantically in the darkness, as though the entire world were one black gully. At certain moments, the air streamed against the ship as if sucked through a tunnel with a concentrated solid force of impact that seemed to lift her clean out of the water and keep her up for an instant with only a quiver running through her from end to end. And then she would begin her tumbling again as if dropped back into a boiling cauldron. Jukes tried hard to compose his mind and judge things coolly. You got to read the whole thing, Typhoon by Joseph Conrad. What's amazing about this book, I don't know if it's still taught anymore. I guess he's too good a writer and he was too macho for the teachers of today. This man was actually Polish. Joseph Conrad was Polish, and he learned English as a second language. Conrad was born in the Polish Ukraine in 1857. The son of Polish patriots exiled to Siberia. Did you know that? Joseph Conrad was orphaned at 12. From 1874 until 1894, he sailed the world, both as a mate and ship's captain. Naturalized as a British subject in 1886, Conrad retired from the merchant service in 1894 and settled permanently in England. His first novel, Almayer's Folly, was published the following year. Among his important works are Lord Jim, Nostromo, Under Western Eyes, Heart of Darkness, and Victory. One of my favorite writers. But I read to you from one of his great books about the sea called Typhoon. Unbelievable writing. English is a second language. Somehow he learned the language quite well. Indiana William, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on the air.
The girl, I just read the paper today, and a girl died at a young age unexpectedly in her sleep. So you got to go what you got to go for. And Prince Charles, I think, is afraid of the Muslims due to this madness backward world we're in right now with this politically correctness.
I think that Prince Charles is tied into the oil money so deeply that he is making nice to his Saudi masters. My suspicion is that Saudi Arabia runs England.
Yes.
Very much as though Saudi Arabia runs America with a certain politician that we all love so much.
I believe that Clinton, didn't he sign NAFTA? Wasn't he the beginning of all this, selling our jobs overseas?
Well, NAFTA, then CAFTA, and all of us on the conservative side were against it. We said it's going to cost us our manufacturing base, and the chattering classes said that we were just naturists. We were somehow reactionary naturists. We were Neanderthals for saying it. We were right, of course. We're always right, and they're always wrong. Do you want to talk about Prince Charles? Do you want to talk about the 16-year-old girl? I think she's an inspiring young lady. Even if she's lost at sea forever, she's inspired me to go out a little further in my boat, to be frank with you. You watch that video of her, which I linked up on this show, on my website, the youngest sailor giving a tour of her sailboat. There's another one of a 17-year-old Australian girl. It's amazing, who already went around the world alone. And a boy on a boat, 17 years old, who did this.
Savage.
We
mean, I'm a water person. I've been in love with the sea my entire life. I don't know, it must be inherent in me. I've always been drawn to the sea. I always try to live near water. I get very screwed up if I live inland too far. I need to see water. You know, I grew up as a kid on Long Island. I always had to go to the Long Island Sound or the East River. I always had to see water to feel that I knew where I was even. I always had a sense of where I was when I saw water. And when I could, I got a boat, then I got another boat, then another boat, another boat. Now, I've never done anything as daring as this. But, you know, such attempts of children doing things of this nature have led to court battles. Last year, a Netherlands court concerned about safety blocked a 13-year-old girl's plan to sail around the world, which sparked debate on the role of authorities and parents when children want to undertake risky adventures. It's odd that a Netherlands court would be concerned about the safety of a 13-year-old when they have such salacious laws with regard to sexuality in Netherlands, but they have no problem with that. No problem with that. No legislation about that, but, oh, this is their problem. Last month, 13-year-old Jordan Romero of Big Bear, California, became the youngest person to climb 29,000-foot Mount Everest. But in 1996, a 7-year-old young lady, Jessica Dubroff, a child, 7 years old, with her father and a flight instructor, were killed in a crash in Cheyenne, Wyoming, during her attempt to become the youngest person to fly across the country. So, look, there is an issue here. There is an issue. The thing is this. Her brother held this record in 2009. They're lifelong sailors, her and her brother. Her father is a shipwright and has a yacht management company. So Abby set sail from Los Angeles' Marina Del Rey in her 40-foot boat, Wild Eyes, on January 23rd. In an attempt to become the youngest person to sail around the world alone without stopping. She's already stopped in South Africa because I think her chart plotter broke. So she can't, you know, win that of it. She stopped. Her brother held a record in 09. But listen to this. Her brother said that she had more skill and experience than most sailors in their 20s and 30s. Her father said she had more solo sailing experience than her brother Zach did before he started out. She said, he totally thinks that I'm ready to do it, so that does help. But anyway, we don't know what happened. She may have been hit by a rogue wave. She may have been swamped. She may have been turned over. We don't know what happened. Could be that she had a severe knockdown or roll by a strong wave that knocked out her communication equipment. Or the boat has had structural damage and can't sail. The worst case is if she's in the water without a life raft, or she's in a life raft in those seas 2,000 miles from land. It's a very extreme situation with that kind of wind and force. If she does not have a dry suit, she's dead. If she was not wearing a dry suit during the night when this rough weather came up, she's dead. That's all there is to it. It's a pretty rough business. You know, here I am. I'm a bay boater, and I'm a bay boater with a power boat. I go out off the shore once in a while, and I see the difference. I know what it is to go out on the ocean. In fact, I've been on the ocean on my boat with a captain once. It was beautiful. It was a calm day. But on a rough day, you don't even want to know what that's like. Even off the coast of California, you could be quite severe. We have a point here called Point Concepcion, which is our, what do we call it, like in Cape Hatteras, Cape Fear. You have a Cape Fear on the East Coast. We have Concepcion here on the West Coast. I've known boaters who've been laid up for 2 weeks. They couldn't go through it. They could not go around Concepcion right off the coast of California. They had to lay into the harbor for 2 weeks. They couldn't go out to see it so bad. So you're not dealing with a joke here. You know, this is not Barbara Boxer's environment. All the environmentalists, they don't really hike, they don't boat, they don't hunt, they don't fish. So, you know, let's see what happens here before arguing over it. I don't know. I have an 8-man life raft on my boat, a coastal life raft, for example. It's very interesting. If your boat goes down, there's a thing called an EPIRB, which if it goes underwater 15 feet, it'll start setting off a signal. By the way, her EPIRB has not gone off yet, so it means that something's not right here. Because if she had gone down, this thing is fixed inside the boat, and at 15 feet, it sends off a signal 15 feet below the water. No signal has been heard from her yet, you know? So, you can drive a car at 16, can't you? Most of the world, you can man an AK-47 at 12 and go join one of the third world armies. I don't see all of the libs screaming, ooh, they're too young to use a gun. No, they think that's neat. That's way cool. Some third worlder are wielding an AK-47 at our troops in Afghanistan because they're freedom fighters. The enemy is our freedom fighters to Oliver Stone. 12 is not too young for Oliver Stone for a third world to wield a gun at one of our troops. No, no, that's fine. Because they're defending their land. Anyway, I think that's a good story, but that's the story. And there's nothing more we can say about it, I guess. New York, Eric, you disagree? Go ahead, please. Eric.
What I told the screener is my son started driving a race car at 6 years old. And the time he hit 14, he was unable to continue in quarter midgets, and he went into stock car racing. But through all those stages, I always noticed that each stage he had to learn different things, situations that came up. And
right.
I could always tell there was always something, you know, in him that it took him a little time to figure out the situations. Now, I had a boat for about 5 years, so I did boating, and I had situations come up at times where it actually made me nervous because I really wasn't used to, you know, different things that I wasn't.
Right, absolutely. There are different sea conditions that change your whole view of the boating experience.
Exactly, and it would make me nervous because I wasn't really a sailor, but I wouldn't know mentally how to deal with it. So I think because of the age, I think there are things that.
But the parents said she had more solo experience than most 30-year-olds.
Well, on that part, I can agree with. Because my son, when he was raised, I mean, when he still races now, there are, you know, he's better than he's racing right now. He just turned actually 18, and he's racing against guys that are 30 and 40-year-olds, and he won Rookie of the Year in 2007. However, at times I still see that there are things he really has to still learn. So that's something that would make me afraid.
I understand. I hear you. But the parents are experienced, lifelong sailors. The child is a lifelong sailor, and she had more experience than most sailors in their 30s. This is not just adventure, you know, that she made up overnight. All right, I think we've covered this. It's a very interesting story. I think she's very inspiring, and I hope Abby is alive, and I hope Abby comes back because she's going to be a hero. Even if the boat went down, she's a hero to have survived this. Go watch the related video. Take a look at the spunk of this child. You know, this is the kind of child that we need to see. This is what we need to see. This is the kind of girl our children should be looking up to, not the kind that the media holds up. The single moms on daytime television, they hold up as a hero, you hear? Or somebody who decides to sleep with a camel, and they say that, well, she's a hero. We're going to make her a hero. Mayor Bloomberg gives her a key to the toilets of Central Park West. Anyway, that's my opinion. What do you want to talk about? Anything is fair game. Obama again. What can I say that we haven't said? He's a party animal, doesn't know what he's doing, and he's wrecking America like King Ludwig II of Bavaria. Well, how many times could I do this a day? I mean, it just is the shocks every day to the system. They're worse by the day, truthfully. Did you hear about the scandal at Arlington now? You want to have another bad you want to have another bad moment? I can give you another bad moment. You didn't hear the scandal at Arlington that we put in charge of Arlington National Cemetery? Another moron? No, I'm not even going to tell you about it. How about Kagan, who he wants to put on the Supreme Court, that he gave her makeup, the handlers gave her makeup and pearls and a pair of earrings from QVC last week? The woman never wore makeup or lipstick, I think, in her entire adult life, because that's not her her lifestyle. Let's put it to you that way. But all of a sudden, in order to sell it to Mr. and Mrs. Schmuck in the middle of America, they suddenly said, all right, like, get some lipstick on her. All right, get some, tell you what, next time she comes out, tell you, put some makeup on her lipstick, get her some pearls, and get her some of those earrings from the green room. The next day, you can't believe it. Kagan's politics are so out of the ken of normal that it's impossible to believe that she'd even be put up to be on the Supreme Court. Tomorrow, they're going to release another ton of papers, 2,000 more pages tomorrow in the Savage Nation, while everyone's away in the Catskill Mountains. Eating borscht. No one goes there anymore. People go on the weekends. I don't know where they go anymore. Everything's different. The whole world's different. I don't go anywhere. Everyone goes somewhere. One of my relatives is in Rome right now, having a great time. I'm not jealous. I could have been in Rome. But I'm going to sleep. I get an email of her in a restaurant eating dinner in Florence. It's astounding from a cell phone. I can't believe it. It's a crazy world, isn't it? Like when I was a kid and went to Europe, you have to take pictures and bring them home and bring them to the store and develop them. And 2 weeks later, everyone says, "Oh, look at the picture that you took in Mallorca 3 months ago." It's an astoundingly beautiful world. It's a little crazy to see. Yeah, I'm enjoying the dinner, the cobblestone streets. Enjoy it before it becomes Muslim. Go ahead, enjoy the back streets of Italy. Go in the empty churches. Like she went and saw David, the actual statue of David. Awesome. 17 feet tall. Awesome. The awesome David as opposed to a picture of David. You know, everyone's seen David in their days in school. Here we have we have Obama, who's a papier-mâché messiah. But in Italy, they have real art. They're not papier-mâché. Chris drops pro-life message from campaign website. Oh, Chris. Whitman versus Jerry Brown, a tight race. That's a California thing. You wouldn't know about it. East of the Sacramento River. That's a funny statement. New Yorkers are snobby. They say anything west of the Hudson, we don't, you know, doesn't exist. It's flyover country. Well, if you're California centric, we could turn it around on you. I wouldn't say anything west, east of the, is it, yeah, east of the Sacramento River. No, but that still includes Sacramento. I would say anything east of the Sierra Nevada. Meg Whitman's mega win in Tuesday's Republican primary has thrown her into a virtual tie once again with demon cat Jerry Brown in the race to be the next governor of California. That's nonsense. Rasmussen telephone survey of likely voters, that doesn't mean anything. They never get the callers who are actually going to vote. 74% of conservatives in California favor Whitman, the former CEO of eBay. 80% of libs like Brown, a longtime political hack who is currently serving as attorney general. Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. I believe Whitman's going to win. I believe it's going to be the real year of the woman instead of the year of the Yenta. 1994 was the year of the Yenta woman. They were all Democrat, you know, girls who should have owned Carvel shops or brassiere stores. They became senators, congresswomen. Take a look at them. But now we have the real businesswomen, Republicans. I have a suspicion that the independents are going to vote for the for Whitman. And I have a suspicion that even Democrat women are going to vote woman over Jerry Brown. No pollster is going to say it. First of all, the women would never give it away in a telephone call. They're automatically going to say Democrat. But when they get in that booth, they're going to go with their gender. They're going to go woman. So I say, go, girl, go. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Beyond the sea.
Well, here are some headlines. The leaders in Louisiana want Gulf drilling to resume. Go tell that to the hysterical liberals on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. The leaders in Louisiana want Gulf oil drilling not to end, but to resume. Go tell that to the schmucks in Hollywood as they have their Gulf streams fueled up to fly to some stupid meeting somewhere. All environmentalists. Were they painting their planes green now? Army, bodies misidentified and misplaced at Arlington. Some bodies buried on top of each other. One of Obama's Goombas was given the job to run Arlington. Go take a look at the picture. Go ahead, go take a look who he's put in the head of Arlington. One of his Goombas from Chicago was given the job. Maybe they can do some vig off the top of the Arlington business. Pope defends celibacy for priests at Vatican rally. I don't think they should be celibate, personally. I think they should marry. You know, there was a time that in the Catholic Church, I understand that priests and nuns married. It makes sense to me. Maybe they don't want to be married. I don't know. That's another story. Maybe this flock doesn't want marriage, you know. Not with all the young children around me. What do they need marriage for? Why marry? Why marry a nun when you got all the young boys that you can give a wafer to? I said a wafer to. That's a joke. Not a wafer to. A wafer to. That's funny in its own way. It's borderline Jonathan Swift who wound up in that tower. Wasn't it funny, Beowulf, when you got so many boys you can give a waif or two? A waif or two, W-A-I-F or two. Or did I say a waif or two? W-A-F-E-R, two. I think it's very humorous how I stumbled upon words with the asthma. Pope defends celibacy for priests at Vatican rally. So I stumbled upon an idea. Maybe they don't want to be married. Did you ever think about that? Maybe they're happy to be celibate. look, you can't blame the whole church for 7% of the priests who are a little on the, you know, the weak side. But, you know, there was a time, wasn't it, in the 1700s when the priests married nuns? That's not like, to me, that's like, that makes sense, doesn't it? How come rabbis can get married and priests can't? What is that all about? The Muslims marry, don't they? The imams, don't they marry? Sure they do. A Buddhist, can a Buddhist guy get married, a Buddhist priest? You telling me a Hindu wouldn't get married with the Kama Sutra? What, are you nuts? That's like the sexiest religion on the planet, like the Hindus. Don't fall for the whole... No, I mean, to them, it's like it's not like our Victorian thing. They had the Kama Sutra thousands of years ago. To them, it was not like a big, you know, uptight thing. You take a look at the Kama Sutra, the positions, forget about it. It has something to do with Indian food, probably the hot food. I'm not sure what it is exactly. Pope defends celibacy for priests at Vatican rally. No, no, it should be talked about. Pope defended celibacy for priests as a sign of faith in an increasingly secular world, insisting on a church tradition that has increasingly come under scrutiny amid the clerical sex abuse scandal. In other words, there are people saying, let them get married already. Maybe they wouldn't be tempted to do anything, you know, a little off the beam here if they had a wife to go home to. Take the collar off and sit down and have a, you know, a stew, some kind of stew, and watch TV, kick your legs up, have a little wine, and the next day you can go and be, you know, a preacher the next day. The Vatican has long denied that its celibacy requirement was the root cause of priests who rape and sodomize children. Oh, that's ugly. Yet the requirement of celibacy, which is a tradition in the church, but is not part of church doctrine, has come under increased questioning amid the scandal, and even some top prelates have called for an honest examination of it. Hey, that's a great topic. Didn't I just say that? It's not part of church doctrine? That's interesting. So in other words, the whole thing about celibacy is an anomaly when you think about it. It's not in the Bible. It's not even in the Bible that you should be a celibate to be a priest. When did that come into? When did that come into play here when you think about it? I think it's a very big discussion that we all ought to have. Should priests be able to get married? The nuns, I mean, it'd be perfect if they married a nun. They keep it in the family that way. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to go too far outside. You're not going to marry like a girl who's not religious. If a priest gets married, she marries to look within the nuns. But they can't. The nuns can't marry ever. That's a different story. As I understand it, they have taken a vow to be married to God, right? To be serious about it. They marry God, and they're not supposed to be married to man. That's another story. It's like a guilt trip. They feel bad. They did something, an abortion, a little run around, and then they send them to a nunnery, and the next thing, and all right, that's another story. But a priest? What are they going to do with all that testosterone? The main U.S. clerical abuse victims group, Survivors Network for Those Abused by Priests. I have to always do the acronym. SNAP. SNAP. Everything's cute. Said Benedict had passed up a perfect opportunity to announce clear steps to protect children and assist that abusive priests be reported to police. I'm not going to say a word about that. That's the church's problem. One asked him to speak about what he called the beauty of celibacy, which he said was so often criticized in the secular world. I don't know. I couldn't be that way. I'd go out of my mind. Could you be celibate realistically? I'd be insane within about 3 weeks. To me, it's if you're an earthy person, how could you be celibate? It's bound to make you a nut. Take a look at what it's done to most liberals. They like not to be celibate, but they are because nobody wants to go near them with the rotten teeth and the rotten mind.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Sees the arrogance of Obama and the complete detachment from not reality. He has a real reality. Now, let's put aside the fact that he was unknown as near as 2 years ago and that all of his records are sealed and no one knows what he studied, what he wrote. We don't know any of that. We do know that all of his friends, or the most prominent ones, and his instructors in his church were all of a certain, let us say, bandwidth, on a certain bandwidth. We all know that Marxism and Leninism and things of that nature were very much part of his upbringing. But you could say, well, okay, people change as they get older or more mature. That's certainly true. Many people are very liberal when they're young, and they become conservative when they grow up. But some don't change. In fact, they become more fanatic. I believe he has become more fanatic. And I believe that his a passing of Obamacare by any means necessary has made him so bold that he's out of control, and his insolence is out of control. And no better description of Obama's power madness can be found in William Shakespeare's Hamlet. If you remember Hamlet's famous soliloquy, "To be or not to be," where it's written, "For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, the oppressor's wrong, and the insolence of office." Think of each one of those phrases. Now, how does the dictionary define insolent? Insultingly contemptuous in speech or conduct. Does that apply to Obama? Yes, he's insultingly contemptuous of the American people. Obama shows his contempt by rejecting the polls which say the American people hate his health care plan. Obama shows his contempt by demanding silence from his critics. Obama shows his contempt by ignoring the Constitution. Under Obama, the insolence of office has been raised to the highest office in the land. The man is arrogant, and all of that can be accepted if he had some checks and balances imposed upon him by Congress, or by the press, or by the Supreme Court. Do you see any checks and balances in Obama's absolute power? The Republican Party, null and void. Supreme Court, null and void. So where are the checks and balances? Oh, in the media, huh? So there are three or four people speak out against the man's activities, and we are the press now? We're the problem? When the entire press is in the man's pocket? You have a Congress that's filled with lunatics? Do you think any of these dummies really understand what climate is? Do you think they understand anything about mathematics or physical science or chemical science or plant science? They don't understand anything. They're politicians. They say what they think the people want to hear who put them in power, irrespective of whether or not it is true or false. That's why their ratings are in the garbage. Now to get back to the thing I raised before, the pirates, even though it's not in the news, it's on my mind because we have a Navy that doesn't fire a shot, and it's pissing me off. I'm a member of the Navy League. I'm a lifetime member of the Navy League. I love the Navy. And I cannot for the life of me understand how so many admirals cannot be firing a shot when we have so many enemies around the world. Case in point, the pirates. So the Navy SEALs shot one or two pirates, and the command had to come out of somewhere in Washington or Tampa Bay. They had the pirates in their sights for 4 hours, by the way, the snipers on the rafts had the snipers in their sights for 4 or 5 hours. They were not allowed to fire a shot. The same way Obama's not letting them build the berms. You hear this? Now, the United States and the Barbary Pirates. 1784, first American ship seized by pirates from Morocco, right? What happens? The Americans had a president, Thomas Jefferson, actually, who was ambassador to France, and John Adams, then the ambassador to Britain. And they meet in London with Mr. Aja, the ambassador to Britain from Tripoli, where the piracy occurred. The Americans asked Aja why his government was hostile to American ships, even though there had been no provocation. The ambassador's response was reported to the Continental Congress. Listen carefully. It was written in their Quran that all nations which had not acknowledged the prophet were sinners, whom it was the right and duty of the faithful to plunder and enslave, and that every Muslim who was slain in this warfare was sure to go to paradise. He said also that the man who was the first to board a vessel had one slave over and above his share, and that when they sprang to the deck on an enemy ship, every sailor held a dagger in each hand and a third in his mouth, which usually struck such terror into the foe that they cried out for quarter at once. And so they started paying off the pirates with bribery. In fact, it reached so bad that the bribery amounted to 20% of United States government annual revenues in 1800. And so they set up a navy. They stopped paying the ransom, because by late 1793, a dozen American ships had been captured, goods had been stripped, and everyone enslaved by the Muslims, who said it was their duty as Muslims. Did you hear what I just said to you? Did you hear that? After the debate, the United States Navy was born in March 1794. Six frigates were authorized, and so began the construction of the United States, the Constellation, the Constitution, and three other frigates. The military presence helped to stiffen American resolve to resist the continuation of ransom to the pirates. It led to the two Barbary Wars along the North African coast. It was not until 1815 that naval victories ended ransom payments by the United States. And here we have come full circle with the most powerful navy in the world, unable to fire a shot because of Barack Hussein Obama. All right, here are some other news stories on the Savage Nation. Obama's agreed to give the Palestinians $400 million of your money in aid. Let me repeat that. Barack Hussein Obama has unveiled a $400 million aid package to the Palestinians. Just write the check. After all, it's his money. The drunken president doesn't understand the first thing about balancing a check. He's never had to balance a checkbook, right? Everything was given to him. So, hey, write a check to the Palestinians. They may love him for it. And they could always build more bombs with it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you hear the one about the FBI and Joran van der Slot? Did you hear that he used their money? They gave him money on a sting. He was trying to extort the Holloways. He collected money from them, FBI money. He then used the money to go to South America, where he killed a girl. Oh, yeah. Yep, the new FBI under Barack Hussein Obama. It's unbelievable. Wherever you turn, I've never seen anything like this. The alien in the White House, Barry Vinovich, says it all. So, you know, whatever you want to say about me, don't say one thing about me. I always go to the defense of the defenseless in this country, whether they be dogs, gorillas, elephants, or Marines, or soldiers.
Savage.
I have a couple of things I want to tell you about. A, how I just survived coffee at a Starbucks in San Francisco. This took the patience of Job. Before the show, I went down. I do almost everything myself to know what Life 101 really is. I could hire someone. But, you know, I figured out it's actually good for me to. Otherwise, I wind up like George Bush Sr. Wow, golly be gee, that's a checkout stand in a supermarket. Whoa, cool. Wow, that's a laser. Ooh. No, I got to go buy coffee and see how you people suffer, fools, ungladly. Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks. It's not easy, I got to tell you. I'm in a rush. It's like, you know, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though. And bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of the sweet do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute, no one would say, just give me the blueberry cake or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the, oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me. And did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say, coffee and get out of there. But no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no. Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated. The guy didn't even know what she said. That's right. And a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it for her, she pulls out a coupon. Prior to surviving Starbucks, I did something even more threatening to my psyche, which was I went to Fisherman's Wharf. I got into the city early, so I went by bicycle to Fisherman's Wharf. I haven't been there for a year. I stopped going for about a year. I went once this year. And I went and had a bowl of clam chowder soup and some joint near the water. The guy gave me a bowl of cornstarch with the droppings of a clam in it. I don't know how they didn't get arrested for this. How do they sell this on Fisherman's Wharf? Then the nerve of this mutt, he says to me, do you want a cup or a bowl? I was in a rush. I was on the phone. I said, give me a cup. The cup was $5.95. A bowl would have been a dollar more. I paid and left. I didn't care. But the point was the soup was garbage. How do they serve this to tourists? With it was like cornstarch with the essence of a squeezed clam in it? But the schmucks don't know what they're eating. That's why they call it the Redneck Riviera. You should see the blimps walking around down there. You know, you should see the average American. I don't know what they have in their brains. Like IQ average, 65 after a fish meal. They walk into cars. They walk in front of cable cars like blimps floating around. Stuffed, stupid, morons. You could push them in any direction you want. So I'm bicycling back past two U.S. warships from World War II, the Jeremiah O'Brien and the USS Pomponito, a U.S. submarine from World War II. You marvel at it. 120 men were in that thing in World War II. If you were to take that ship today and look at the average fat, obese, disgusting American tourist walking on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, A, you couldn't get more than 18 of them into that submarine. B, you'd have to sue the Navy under the ADA to have them blowtorch open the hatches to get him in and out. Every time I encounter anything outside the house, it's a problem. Who serves a man a bowl of clam chowder soup that is made primarily of cornstarch and the essence of a clam and charges them $6.95? They're lucky that I didn't say anything to them. I went there like invisible to see what it would be like if I were a tourist. But they don't know what they're eating. They're drunk, most of them. You put a glass of wine in them, a cheap glass of rotgut wine. They get giddy. What do they know what they are? Play Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. I see John Travolta with the bell bottom doing disco in the aisles of a 747 with his friends from Scientology, meeting their God as they fly across the Earth's atmosphere, discoing into the next universe. I think I had one pair of bell bottoms. They made you feel so free, didn't they? Didn't they give you a sense of freedom, those velvet bell bottoms? I don't know. I wish I could say what I really meant on this show. What needs to be done. Wish I could really let it out. One day, just open up the 12 cylinders inside my soul. Right now, I'm running on about 6, 7. If I could really pour gas down those cylinders, I could give you an action plan that would have you alerted, alive. You'd feel alive you haven't felt, like you haven't felt in 30 years. I could bring this country to a halt. I could change things in 2 days. But instead, I will just play disco music. Play it a little louder, please. Louder, louder. Picture all of the truckers. Picture every independent trucker in America blocking every tunnel and every bridge in America to say enough is enough to the Congress and the oil companies. Just envision that. You want to have a vision? Let's start with the basics. One day, one strike like in France where every independent trucker closes down every bridge and every tunnel in the United States of America.
You want to see those liars and rats in Congress finally do something instead of pointing fingers at each other? You want to see the Seven Sister Oil Companies go to prison? Hey, play, staying alive. Yeah, play, staying alive. Go ahead. I'm not recommending this, of course. That's plan of action number one for today in the fantasy land of the Savage Nation. But we're just doing disco. Disco on the Savage Nation. Staying alive. Staying alive. But I have a dream. I have a dream that one day I'll awaken to every bridge and tunnel in America blocked by the independent truckers of America who say, up yours, Johnson. Up yours, Jack. You've jacked us up. You've killed us. You brought in drivers from Mexico. You've undermined us and killed us. Up yours, Jack. All you corporate CEOs, here's the middle finger from the truck driver. How's that for step one to take back America on the Savage Nation? Staying alive. Staying alive. Step number one, fantasy in the Savage Nation. A fantasy in the Savage Nation. We become France. France becomes us. The workers go on strike. The real workers, not the illegal alien workers. Strike for illegal things. No, the legitimate American truck driver. He blocks every bridge and every tunnel and every artery in America stops. The country comes to a halt. No food, no garbage, no fuel, nothing in, nothing out. Suddenly the CEO crooks, the pirates, in business suits. They can't do the two-step. Suddenly the thieves and criminals in Congress who point fingers to deceive us can no longer do the two-step. I'll be right back. Keep on dreaming, Mike.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Now we'll take your calls on the Savage Nation. Raleigh, North Carolina. Tiffany, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Savage. Just calling to let you know that I really enjoy listening to your show.
That's all? That's the whole thing?
No, that's not the whole thing.
Give me the whole thing. Give me the whole shot.
I enjoy listening to your show. I happen to learn a lot when I'm listening to your show.
And oh, that's nice. I do. I try to bring a little more than I have to, you know, because otherwise people would find it boring unless you give them a little poetry, a little learning, a little sign. Yeah, I bet you go away feeling you learned a little, like you were a little bit in school, but in a fun way.
Yeah, in a fun and crazy kind of way. I wish you wouldn't get so upset, though, because I declare I have to turn because I'm thinking you're going to fall out on the radio.
No, I worry about it myself, too, Tiffany. Sometimes I say, you know, at night I can't sleep. It's I get so worked up over these issues like immigration and diseases, I go crazy. And then I get agitated to the point where I worry myself. I say, what are you, nuts? You're going to wind up dying here. The last thing that your fear, Tiffany, is that one day I'm going to be screaming and yelling, and this is the last thing you're going to hear. And I'll tell you! That's your fear, is the mic goes over and I'm finished. Peter on WRKO, you're on the Savage Nation.
Franklin Roosevelt saved England and basically Europe, not Churchill.
Okay. So what is it you're arguing about FDR? What part of this argument am I missing?
Well, you're missing the fact that you tout Churchill as the great leader that in certain instances was, but he could stand there and make the speech that we will fight on the beaches and so on and so forth. But if FDR did not...
All right, well, let's take one person at a time. Churchill was the spiritual or intellectual leader of the English people. He tried to warn them through the 1930s. They wouldn't listen to him. During the war, they did listen to him, and he gave them the courage to fight. Admittedly, it was the Lend-Lease deal and the American troops who saved England. But are you arguing, therefore, that because FDR was a liberal, that only a liberal can save America?
Excuse me, FDR was a progressive Democrat, and if you are...
He was a progressive Democrat. So are you arguing that the internment of the Japanese by this progressive Democrat
was a liberal policy that you would support?
I'm not discussing Japan. I'm discussing the fact that...
Wait, sir, you just said that FDR was a progressive Democrat and that he saved the West during World War II. So I'm asking you, which of the progressive Democrats' policies is it that you are offering us as an example today? Is it the internment of the Japanese?
Nope. I'm talking about the fact of the Second World War and beginning before the Second World War.
Oh, sir, wait a minute. You cannot separate and take away individual acts of FDR and say that those were exceptions. Didn't he pass an executive order to intern the Japanese?
Absolutely. But if you
all right, wait. Does that make him a progressive Democrat, or does that tell us that in times of war, the progressive politics that you seem to be a fan of may have to be put on hold?
Again, I'm not going to discuss that. If you want to end the call, fine. I want to talk about...
Why do you mean you won't discuss it? Is that because you can't or you won't?
No, I won't. How's that?
Well, why not? Tell me why you will not discuss the internment of the Japanese, since you're glorifying FDR and you're saying it's his liberalism that saved the West. But I'm asking you if his acts during World War II, of which there were many, including the internment of the Japanese, were liberal acts or were they actually conservative acts?
They were acts at the time that probably were warranted, but hindsight, Monday morning quarterback, showed that they would not have been done if people were not concerned with a so-called imminent attack by the Japanese on our West Coast. Okay?
I'm missing the point. So let's look at some of the, you don't want to talk about the internment of the Japanese by this progressive Democrat. So let's talk about some of the other acts of FDR during World War II that certainly don't exhibit any kind of progressive liberal nature. They were very clearly conservative in nature. Many of his acts were conservative in nature. So during the war, he was able to put aside his socialism and his tendencies toward liberalism and move to save America. So I don't see where you and I have to argue over this.
Yeah, we do have to argue over it because of the fact that the way you tout Churchill with regard to basically saving England is a lot of horse feathers because it took...
So you're arguing now that Churchill's work in the 1930s was to no avail? He single-handedly built up the British armaments industry. What are you talking about?
Look, if it wasn't...
He was fought by men like you who were appeasers who said... Germany does not threaten us. We don't need to build up our Navy. We don't need to build up our Air Force. It was because of Churchill that they built the Spitfire plane during the 1930s. It was because of Churchill that they built up the Royal Navy, that they had a military. So how can you argue he had no effect upon the war?
And in our country, we had so-called conservative Republicans that said, this fight is not ours. Europe's war is not ours. You don't remember that, but if you read history, you would have seen that.
Don't lecture me about history because you read one book. Your points do not make sense. What you're trying to argue is that we need a progressive leader to save us in this battle against Islamofascism. But I'm willing to bet that you won't even identify Islamofascism as the threat, will you? But what happened to you? You went deaf, dumb, and blind all of a sudden? Where do you stand on the threat from Osama bin Laden and the Islamofascists? Do you say it doesn't exist, it does exist, or what?
No, I don't want to even get into that.
What do you want to get into? Why are you wasting my time? Go back to one of your communist halls down there in Boston and give yourself the malarkey and then have a scotch on me. You're living in the past, my friend. You're an old trade unionist who doesn't even know what the hell you're talking about anymore.
Conflict of interest in discussing all of this, too.
You don't know what you're talking about. You have no idea what you're talking about. If you're unwilling or unable to understand the threat we're facing from the Muslim invasion and the Muslim crusade that is going on around the world, how can we even have a discussion?
No, I understand what the threat is.
So why do we argue? Then why are you and I, two good Americans, fighting? Why are we fighting with each other?
The threat is, okay? I understand what the threat is, but I'm
So
not...
then why are you and I, where are we disagreeing? I don't even understand what the disagreement is.
My disagreement is with your touting Churchill at every time I listen to you, and I do listen to you because it's entertainment, not fact, but entertainment.
That's right. In other words, you liberals are the only ones who have brains. We have no brains, the conservatives. We entertain you. The reason you're listening to me is that inside you, there's a man who can still live and stand up and understand reality. The man who wants to overcome and break free of the shackles of liberalism. That's why you're listening to me. I'm not entertaining you. I'm educating you, Peter.
No, not me. If you look at the people that have taken us through wars, from the First World War, through the Second World War, through Korea, through Vietnam, were all Democrat presidents.
So what are you saying, that the Democrats are the party of war?
Fanatical, radical.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that the Democrats are the party of militancy and war?
No, I'm saying that the Democrats...
Oh, wait, you just said that. I agree with you. It has been Democrats who've taken us to war. Absolutely, I agree with you. So what's your point? That they're a militant party of war? Well, then I would gladly become a Democrat if they were still a party willing to stand up for America, but they're not. They become a sort of European socialist party of appeasers. They're not that party that you're talking about. I would gladly join a party that was still a JFK, FDR type party. They disappeared a long time ago, Peter. I think you're living in another world.
No, they didn't disappear. They're there. They are there.
What about my statement that in 1933, did you hear that piece or you missed that?
Which one?
The year that the Nazis came to power. The Oxford Union, which is a debating society where all of the future British political elite would debate, they passed a resolution that said this House would under no circumstances fight for its king and country. That you and I would agree. I think that that's appeasement, wouldn't you?
You got to remember the Germans. You got to remember your history. The Germans. And
well,
the
sir, wait. Don't speak down to me. Don't talk down to me because I'll throw you off my show. This is my bar, not yours. You got to remember your history. And you got to remember that I'm far more educated than you are.
Well, yeah, that's why they didn't accept you into Berkeley. You remember how much you were.
Excuse me, sir. Hello. I earned my PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. What are you talking about? Just what are you talking about?
I never applied
for anything but admission to the PhD program, and I got my PhD in 3 years, sir, with a 3.94 a GPA, whatever they call it. Out of a 4.0. Can you match those credentials, sir?
What about the time you applied for...
Well, no. You see, again, you're a classic weasel. Every time you lose a point, you change the argument. You can't win one point with me, so you keep going to the next point. But I got news for you. You're fighting a futile battle.
You're absolutely
1933,
right.
The Nazis come to power. The Oxford Union, a liberal debating society, says we, this House... would under no circumstances fight for its king and country. That is appeasement. You know that, and I know that. How did Hitler take it? He said, well, the British would never fight another war with Germany. He became emboldened. It's identical to what your leader, Nancy Pelosi, is doing with the Islamo-fascists. I'm ashamed at you, sir, because you probably were one day, at one time in your life, an educated, intelligent man. Now, here's a true childhood story that I may have told once in 15 years of radio. Barry Schmaltz and his crazy mother, Betty Schmaltz, and his father, Louis Schmaltz. The names have been changed to protect the Schmaltzes. Let's see. How do I begin the story? He was about 15 years old. He was a tall kid. His bedroom, pink carpet, two-story house, nice house. He's having a fist fight with his father in the bedroom over something his mother said. It ends with him crying and enraged because he knew he could beat the heck out of his father after a few real good punches were thrown. I don't know if you ever seen a father and son fight. It's actually heartbreaking to see. To me, it was a violation of a very deeply held taboo. Never to strike your father no matter what. Well, I don't know, but that family was crazy from top to bottom. They went at each other with straight rights and blasted each other. And it ended with the kid holding his punches because I think he could have really knocked his father on his butt. He picked up a piggy bank that to me was like, looked like a 25-pound piggy bank that he had, a ceramic one, since I knew him for 10 years. And he was enraged and red-faced and tears running down his eyes. He looked at his father, and he smashed the piggy bank on the floor, and all the coins that he had collected since childhood was smashed. And then the father threw him out of the house, and he wound up living in my mother's in our basement for a little while. Now, I don't know this guy anymore, but let me tell you what happened that day. Here's what happened that day. His mother was a would-be, like, movie star, as many women were in the 50s. They were always trying to be like either not Marilyn Monroe, but there were some buxom movie like Jane Mansfield, more like that type. Cadillac, the platinum blonde hair, always showing off. And the father was a worker, gray-faced. He'd come home gray-faced from his job. He owned a little wholesale milk business. So they were a little better off than us somehow. But she had the Cadillac, the Coupe de Ville, pink one. And a whack job, nuts, out of her mind. Why? She was always trying to lose weight. She went to some doctor in New Jersey who put her on Benzedrine or some kind of amphetamines, which gave her a madness, a Benny high. And so she comes home crazy out of her mind, and she takes a dog chain, and a dog chain, and beats her wrist till it bleeds just before the father comes in at dusk, ashen-faced from the day in the milk plant, and she says, Louie, look what your rotten son did to me. Look what he did to my hands. Well, Louie, the father, naturally would be protective of his wife. He runs upstairs and screams to the kid, Barry, what did you do to your mother? And the kid says, I didn't do anything. You liar, you. And that's when they fought. And that's when it happened. That's when the piggy bank. So from the crazy mother, Betty Schmaltz, who turned Louis against Barry. Now, you say drug usage is prevalent today. Let me tell you something. There's plenty of drug usage in those glorious Eisenhower days, but it was Sub Rosa drug usage. Half the women were either on Miltown or on Benzedrine for diet. Miltown was as popularly prescribed then as Prozac, let's say, is today. You know, a lot of kids came home from college and used a little Miltown with rosé wine, Meduse rosé. They got a nice buzzeroo during the afternoons when the mother wasn't home. So I'm telling you, that's the Schmaltz story. It's a sad story. And the kid wound up basically a bug all his life. He was never stable. Well, I haven't seen him in many years. But he was a good friend of mine, but he's not a reliable friend because when a kid can't rely upon his mother or his father, he winds up to be an unreliable person in life 99% of the time. He winds up to be someone you can't count on because he can never count on somebody else. Right after the show, I'm racing over to the Yacht Harbor to go out on my boat. So during the break, I called and I ordered two pizzas. I have a friend who's going to bring the pizza to the boat. So I said, she bothered me. She said to me, what kind of pizza? I said, I'm on a break. I don't know anything. I said, I know sausage and pepper and onion. I said, no, I can't. I said, Teddy's kosher. I said, he can't have sausage. It was funny. She laughed. I said, he's Hillel, not Halal. That's a joke unto itself, but it's like for a very, very small number of people from Hillel to Halal in one generation. You know what I find amazing is that Halal food is actually kosher food. This is the good news, is that moderate Muslims actually eat Jewish food. Thank God. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same kosher food laws. There's got to be some way to build on that. If a Muslim who's not fanatic can eat a kosher food that the rabbi certifies the chicken, you know, was circumcised or whatever it is, that the cow didn't go to a bathhouse, the normal cow had a husband, had a baby, then got slaughtered, boom, and he'll eat it. And they could both eat the same cow and the same chicken and then the milk and the meat and the flesh and the poultry and no winged creatures and no hoof creatures and no flying creatures with big eyes and no feelers. If they go out in the right way, the wrong way, the feeler is this, then you can't eat it. It's the same rules. It comes from the Old Testament. There's got to be a way to build understanding here between Jews and Muslims. You start with the halal and kosher thing. Maybe there's a way to save the world here. You can't eat a crawling creature that crawls backwards on its belly, but you can eat a crawling creature that flies on Mondays between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern time. God, you ever read those rules? They're very complicated. Most of us can't even live up to the Big Ten. Just thou shalt not steal. Forget about it. You're already looking for a clause. Well, I don't steal, but sometimes I have to take. That's not stealing. It's like Paris Hilton. It's L.A. I do not steal, but it's I hear you on that. But I took something that wasn't mine, but it wasn't really theirs either. And because I'm in L.A., I hear you when I was caught and released in 3 days. Take another rule on the Big Ten. It's impossible for me to follow. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, I don't commit adultery because the person I did it with wasn't married. I may be married, but they weren't. So technically, if you look at it from a biblical point of view, that's not adultery. That's just having a good time, and the girl was single, and she knew I was married, and she wanted the money, so who's it bothering? Nobody. Wasn't adultery. All right. Everything is a clause and an out and a twist. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass, his house, his mouse, his clock. The mouse ran up the clock. I don't covet. I only want it. How does it differ with the want from covet? I don't exactly know, but I know that covetousness is horrible. It is biblically detestable. So I never covet. I only want that which I take. So what I'm saying is we can't even live up to the Big Ten most of the time. Lie, cheat, steal. But now you take religious Jews and religious Muslims. They got like 300, or the religious Jews have 333 commandments. No wonder they're praying all day long. They're praying for forgiveness. Because all day long they're breaking a commandment. They got to be. They didn't touch the fringe properly. The fringe was blue and white, but not exactly the right blue. They prayed forward instead of backwards. The head moved. It's so complicated. And that's why you have to pray all day long if you have 333 rules, because no doubt you're breaking the rules somewhere. Even when you're sleeping, you broke a rule. The first thing you do when you wake up is say, God, forgive me for breaking a rule in the middle of the night. I touched myself below the belt. I didn't mean to. But I was asleep. It was unconscious. It was subconscious. It wasn't me. It was Harry did it. I didn't really do it. There's an evil spirit in me named Harry. Harry reached down below the belt. I didn't mean to. He did. You should punish him. Don't punish me. But since we're in the same body, I understand you, God. I forgive you. God says, you don't have to forgive me, man. I'm the big guy. I'm in charge. Well, I forgive you anyway. Don't say it again, because then you're really going to get punished.
Savage.